Welcome back, everyone, to Arthropod, everybody's favorite entomological podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jody Green, from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
And I am Jonathan Larson, your other host for today.
And where are you from?
Also from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
Ooh, fancy seeing you here.
It is fancy to see you here today.
So today, our topic is all about parasitoids.
Parasitoids.
I love the word parasitoid.
It's a good word, and it's a good group of organisms to talk about, especially at this time of year, I believe.
Oh, that scary time of year?
Yes.
End of October?
Spooky time.
Okay, yes, let's talk about
We don't have ghost bugs to talk about or anything. I guess there are like ghost moths
ghost
as a group.
Ghost mantids.
Ghost mantids, maybe. Mm-hmm. Spiders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's no werewolf bugs or anything
Not
like
yet.
That.
Maybe we will discover that species.
Does a werewolf get fleas? Could the flea then have werewolf powers?
Maybe.
I'm not sure if that's how werewolfism works.
Yes, and I don't know how you would IPM that. So, let's get back to parasitoids. So most people know about parasites.
That's true, they do know about
right.
parasites.
Right, so what's a parasite, Jonathan?
Parasites are things, they can often be internal parasites. There are external parasites as well, though. But these are organisms that they're gaining their sustenance from their host, this thing that they're living on or in. And their end goal is not normally to kill that animal, that thing that they're on, because they need it to live as long as possible. It's their meal ticket. It's their livelihood. And so they don't want it to die necessarily.
Right. So when I think of a parasite, I think of the tapeworm. I once thought I had a tapeworm.
Really? Tell me that story, please.
Ooh, I could eat and eat and eat and eat. People thought I had a hollow leg. It was almost like my circus trick.
Uh-huh.
And then I found out I had hyperthyroid disease. So that wasn't that fun.
So
and that really ruined my weight problem.
Oh.
I got a weight problem. Because then I couldn't eat as much. But for a while, they thought I had a tapeworm because I could sit down at all-you-can-eat spaghetti for hours.
And just
never
eat?
Gain any weight, and I would just still be hungry.
Huh.
So I would not recommend either of those.
No.
But if you do feel like you can eat and eat and eat, get checked out for a tapeworm, which is a pretty nasty test, or get your thyroid checked. So that's my tangent.
That's your PSA for today.
That's my tangent. But I did think I had a parasite, and they would be living off all the spaghetti I was eating. So benefiting from me.
Right. All right? That energy that you're creating from your food.
Right. So would one of the, you know, those insects that when you step on it, sometimes like a worm crawls out.
Mm-hmm.
People are always freaked out about that.
Sure.
Is that a parasitoid?
I wouldn't say that's a parasitoid. I'd say that we're still talking about a parasite there. If you want my professional opinion in this case, what would you say?
I agree with you. It's not a parasitoid because it wants to keep that insect alive. And
right.
So that's why when you smash it, it comes out.
We
right?
call those horsehair worms.
Because it looks like
horsehair. Horse's hair? Yeah.
Yeah. And I've seen those inside of cockroaches, grasshoppers, crickets, beetles, praying mantis.
There's a really cool video of one in a mantis on YouTube. Maybe we'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. People absolutely freak out. But you know what? They're super, super cool. They're not harmful to humans and they don't have any economic importance. They're getting their, it's actually the immature part of that horsehair worm, right? Like as an adult, I think it's aquatic.
Right. They get down into the water, which is why in a lot of the videos you see the organism that's infested is dunked into some water in a bucket
Ooh.
Or something. And then the horsehair worm jumps out.
Yeah. I think something like they make it thirsty. So it has to go drink
yeah.
and then it comes out.
Something like
Ooh.
That. I'm not a parasitologist per se. Are
sure.
you?
No, no.
I just think
they're cool.
I think that that's a cool group. And I know that there are some entomologists out there that work on them. What are some that sort of fall into our camp that we often deal with that are parasites?
Parasites? Oh, well, lice, head lice. I get a lot of head lice calls. Fleas. I'm getting a lot of fleas right now.
Yeah.
My new pirate bugs are going to sleep for the winter.
Painted ladies, dead or gone. Minute pirate bugs, freezing.
Fleas, check your pets. Minute pirate bugs aren't biting inside. If you think they are, they're probably fleas.
Yeah.
You got to treat your pet, check the pet resting areas, and vacuum. Ticks.
Yeah.
Ticks are external parasites. And mites.
Hmm.
We've got a lot of different types of mites.
That's true. Bird mites can sometimes bite us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when the bird flies away.
Clover mites sometimes get into the house at this time of year, especially trying to get away from the cold.
Itch mites.
Mm-hmm. Pyomodes, is that what that's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
I always hear about that in the fall down in Lincoln near campus because there's a bunch of oak trees that lead you towards Memorial Stadium, where the mighty Cornhuskers play every Saturday. And I think that a few years ago, they had a pretty severe problem with these itch mites falling out of the trees.
Yeah. We're always in touch with someone in Kansas because it started down there. So okay. We're always checking on that stuff, the itch mites. Chiggers. Everybody knows about chiggers. they're also a type of external parasite. So let's get into what a parasitoid is. What makes these different?
What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say that parasitoids almost always kill their host, if not absolutely always kill their host. We're talking about something that gets inside of something else and devours it from the inside out, or it can live externally on it and sort of drain the life from it, much like a vampire, to go with our spooky theme for the year. The other one, the internal one, also kind of matches up pop culturally with the xenomorph from the Alien franchise. Have you seen the Alien
movie? Oh, yeah. That was so scary.
I've read that those producers and the director and stuff were inspired a little bit by parasitoid wasps and other insects that do this kind of behavior, because she has egg. Hers is kind of odd. She has eggs that she lays like in a temple or something, and then they open up. And an organism comes out and lays more eggs in you, and then the chest burster comes out.
Yeah, that's the part I just remember.
Yeah. And then the thing that comes out of you, it has incomplete metamorphosis towards adulthood, I think.
I think I'm going to go rent that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's probably on Amazon Prime or something.
Maybe.
Just watch
Alien,
it.
Aliens, which one? The first one?
I would go with the first one, yeah. It's more like a straight horror movie. The second one's kind of an action movie, isn't it?
I don't know. I can't remember. They all blend together. I'm old, remember?
Yeah. You're not old.
So, but most of these insects that are parasitoids, they undergo that complete metamorphosis. So they go through the stages of like egg, larvae, and then a pupal stage, and then an adult. So the female will lay the eggs near or drop a larvae close near on the host. And then the larvae behaves like that internal parasite that we talked about. They develop in the host using that body for nutrients. Yum, 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 yum. And then eventually it does kill the host, but they do this by consuming the non-vital organs first. So they're pretty.
It's kind of diabolical.
They're awesome, right? You go right for the vitals, then you kill your host, and then you're no hungry.
Yeah, it's all dead. And
right.
Who wants to live inside a rotten ham?
No. So how do these parasitoids find their hosts?
Well, I think they have really good antenna, usually, right? That can help them to detect pheromones, perhaps produced by their hosts, or some other things that are kind of unavoidable if you're a living organism. Some of them use the smell of the fecal material of their host.
Smell.
Yeah, just like.
Mm. It's like, well, you have a baby, right?
I do have yeah.
Right? I remember going to, what's it called? Teacher conference, and the kindergarten teacher's like, that's a story of my life, sniffing around trying to find out who pooped.
Who pooped their pants?
So, parasitoid.
That's the same talent, kind of behavior
sensory,
right there.
Yeah. Yep.
Some of them use the earthworm poop to do that, or even white grub fecal material. Mm. They can detect that if they're hunting for those. What else do they do?
Well, some hosts actually make noise. So cicadas and crickets, you know, they stridulate crickets and cicadas make that sound. Yeah. So their host can use their, receptors to find those, acoustic receptors.
The cricket one always fascinates me too, because I think I've read before that the loudest male cricket is the one that gets mated with. But it also opens him up the most to being found by these parasitoids and predators. So it's like, it's a really risky love scenario for these crickets out there.
Right. So hopefully you get to mate before you get used as a
get zapped.
Host.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, cricket.
Good luck with that, crickets. Yeah.
Pros and cons of being the best singer.
What are some other things? Don't they also detect things that the plant that an insect is feeding on?
Right. So if a plant is being fed upon, like by a caterpillar, let's say, the plant will give off some chemicals and the parasitoid can detect that.
These plant volatiles, it's the talking tree hypothesis kind of thing, right? That these volatiles can communicate things plant to plant, but these parasitoids have taken advantage of that as well, it seems.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if there are any parasitoids that hitchhike. Some parasites, like botflies and whatnot, they can can they lay eggs on mosquitoes and the mosquitoes carry them around? So I'm not sure if there are any hitchhiking parasitoids, but I thought that was pretty cool.
That would be kind of cool.
Yes. So, you know, people hate bugs, but there's just, it's undeniable that there's some really cool things that they do.
Well, there's so many niches to fill, right? There's so many empty spots in nature that bugs have taken advantage of and all these different angles that they seem to have thought of that other things haven't.
Yeah, like you don't have to keep constantly feeding your larvae. Just like get it its own body to feed on.
It's a walk and talk and nursery.
Yeah, here's your body.
Here it is.
Grow up yourself.
I don't ever want to see you again.
Yeah, you don't have to do like the social wasps. They gotta what you say. Go find a caterpillar and sushi style. Right. You gotta chop that up. You gotta hunt that. You gotta find that.
Was that your impression of me?
Yes. That was sorry. It was terrible. I'm Jonathan Larson. Sup?
You need a beard.
A purple beard. So what can parasitoids do to ensure their survival of their offspring? Because it seems kind of risky that they would be laying eggs on bodies.
Yeah, because if you were a living creature and you felt eggs being laid on you,
wouldn't pick that out.
Yeah, you would kind of freak out, right?
Yeah, no nits here, please.
So if you think about trying to scratch your back, there are spots on your back that are hard to reach, sort of, right?
Oh, that's why the bot flies deep in the,
Maybe on these parasitoids, they would choose a part of the body on the caterpillar that the caterpillar can't reach or can't scratch with its own prolegs and things like that. And so the eggs are not able to be dislodged.
Yeah. Think about like dogs. Fleas always lay their eggs around like their eyes and their ears, right? Mm. Because they can't get there.
Right.
So that's a good point. What about immune systems? You know, when we get illnesses, our immune system will fight that. So the body usually can detect that there's some kind of foreign object in there.
Well, we'd have to talk a lot about an insect's ability to fight off infections, right? It's very different than ours. Their blood isn't quite the same. They do have immune systems, but they can be easily tricked by some of these parasitoids if the parasitoid also injects a disease for them to fight. So a virus that the insect,
so tricky.
It's very diabolical.
Very tricky.
The insect spends its time trying to fight off the virus, and those eggs are able to prosper and hatch and outcome the larvae that are going to feed on it.
What if there's already eggs in that host?
Well, I think that there are some insects that produce epidietic pheromone that tells other moms, essentially, hey, this one's already in use, occupado. Go find another host to lay your eggs in. So we don't have overlapping necessarily families on top
of
one another.
Right. So that would be survival of the species because you'd want them to have enough food.
Right.
Because it's not just sometimes in some cases one egg per host.
Right.
It could be like multiple as we'll see.
But I get the feeling that's not necessarily what you were referring to.
Well, I know you're all about parasitoids.
I'm all about it.
Oh, yeah. We had a big conversation once about that.
Yeah.
So that's when an egg is laid in a host by a parasitoid, and then another parasitoid lays the egg in the larva of the parasitoid that laid it in the host in the first place.
Bugs on bugs on bugs on bugs.
Yes.
Ad infinitum.
I said that all for you. So do you want to go into some parasitoids, meet some parasitoids that we might know and just not be aware that these are parasitoids?
Yeah. I think that one of my favorite parasitoids is one that helps us out a lot, particularly in the garden. As a horticultural entomologist, I'm intrigued by biocontrol and having some allies out in nature. We deal a lot with pesky aphids on many of our plants. The little things that plug in and suck the juice right out of the plant.
Cornicles.
And, yeah, they poop everywhere. They have fancy cornicles, tailpipes on their butts that can be used to identify them. But they have some enemies called braconid wasps that find them, sting them, inject their eggs into them. And as they develop, they turn the aphids into
mummies.
Again, Halloween theme.
Very
so mummies
got to
come up. And those aphid mummies, if you see them, they're kind of brown and papery. They look like a paper lantern, and they're very different looking than most of the aphids around them. If you see that, you should definitely leave that alone because a wasp may have come out of it already, but it may come out in the future as well.
How can you tell if a wasp has already come out of it?
They cut their way out. So they cut a hole in the rear end of the aphid, and they saw their way out of it, just like a cartoon almost. And if you see that sort of pop topped open, then you know that the adult wasp has emerged And that's a good sign. That means you've got a healthy wasp population around your aphids, and they should be kept in check by this beneficial biological control agent. How about you? You got a favorite parasitoid?
Well, one that I get a lot of pictures sent to me are the giant hornworm caterpillars, and they've got these cute little white puffy looking rice things, and everyone's like, what is wrong with this caterpillar, or is this normal?
Right.
And I say, yeah, that's totally normal, and that's really cool. That's a parasitoid wasp that has laid eggs in that caterpillar. Sorry about your caterpillar.
A lot of people seem to think that that caterpillar is laying its own eggs, which of course we know as big-time professional entomologists, right, that they can't do that. They're not sexually mature enough to create their own offspring yet. But they are helping to create somebody else's offspring. I love getting those photographs and telling people about that. And I always try to encourage them not to squish that hornworm caterpillar.
Yeah, it's already doomed, and it's food. But that's another braconid wasp. And the caterpillars that they are they prey on are the sphingid caterpillars. So those are your tomato hornworms, your tobacco hornworms, your catalpa, sphinx.
Hot moths.
Oh, yeah. They've got those, the unicorns. They have the unicorn
at
the other end.
If you were to describe a braconid wasp, how would you describe it?
Well, the ones for the aphids are really small.
Yeah.
And you can see them in the aphid colonies like all the time.
So they're diminutive, you would say?
I would say they're very tiny.
We're not talking like yellow.
No, no. Size. So they, a lot of times people would think if they saw it, it would be like a flying ant or a gnat.
Okay.
You wouldn't think that a wasp that small could do such an incredible maniacal thing. Because they fit in perfectly. And it doesn't seem like they're alarmed. The host is alarmed. The aphid population just goes on sucking.
Yeah.
And the little wasps are just all over them. How would you describe a braconid wasp?
Definitely tiny, usually dark in color, kind of a classic wasp body shape with the tapered waist and everything, but not big or impressive. And we're going to talk about a lot of different kinds of wasps today, but most of them wouldn't be something that you would look at and be like, oh, wasp, and kind of run away from. A lot of them are smaller because they're laying their eggs in things, and so they don't need to be very large. On the other end of the spectrum, though, there are some really big ones, right?
Yeah, I think you sent me a text of an Icumonid wasp.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually receive a couple of those, too. And it's this, it looks like a very slender, long abdomen wasp with a really thread-like, super long ovipositor. So that's coming out of the butt. And it can be on a tree. And what it's doing is like boring through the bark to get to the larvae underneath to lay an egg.
Yeah, it's kind of impressive to watch them work because it looks so fragile and hair-like, but it's quite durable and they're able to thread it down into the wood and find their host and lay their egg in it. People also get really freaked out when you tell them, oh yeah, that's the stinger. And then they're afraid that it's going to go into them. So are any of these really sting hazards for us?
No. So for humans, they are not aggressive and they're not going to sting us, especially the Icumana wasp.
Unless you are like a bunch of cicadas pretending to be a person.
Possibly.
Speaking of cicadas, is there one of these that attacks our favorite noise-making insects?
So the cicada killer wasp.
Yeah.
Oh, such a problem. Such a problem in Nebraska. A million calls right before school starts of these massive hornets trying to attack me. I can't get out my front door.
Right.
These are a type of burrowing wasp, but it's a solitary wasp. They are the largest wasp in Nebraska, and they're parasitoids of cicadas. So
what do they look like?
They're big.
Mm-hmm. How big?
The females can be about like 2 inches long. The male's a little bit smaller, but they are black with three bright yellow stripes on its abdomen. They've got like brownish-reddish eyes and the brownish-reddish wings. They're large, and the males hover around you, and they're very territorial. So, I mean, you can't not see them.
But is their buzz worse than their bite?
Most definitely.
Why is that?
Because, first of all, the female doesn't care
right
at all. And the males, they don't sting.
They're not even packing any heat, right?
No
gun.
No.
They have a pseudo stinger, so
they have a pseudo stinger. They could probably jab you, but there's no venom behind that, so it's not going to do anything. And it might hurt, but after all the research and observation I've been doing, and I probably would deserve to be stung quite a bit. I've never been stung.
But what does the female do?
So the female goes off and hunts, and she will catch a cicada, sometimes even in the air, and drag it back to the burrow. And so it's an open area, well-drained soil, and it can be close to pavers or sidewalks, retaining walls, things like that.
Right on.
But they drag it in there, and she'll lay an egg on the cicada, and then the larva will develop, and it will not emerge until the following summer.
I had read online once that on a cicada mania post that the female cicada killer, if it's a female egg, that she will put like two or three cicadas near that egg. If it's a male egg, it only gets one cicada because they're smaller.
Favoritism.
Less important overall, biologically speaking.
True.
The female's obviously bigger and more important. So I think that's a really fascinating organism. It bums me out that people hate them so much because they really aren't a big deal. I know it's Waspzilla and all that kind of stuff, but I just wish that people would accept them a little more.
Well, and you know, the males do come out sooner.
Mm-hmm.
When they emerge in the summer, it's always the males, and they come out and they just wait for the females to come out of the burrow so they can mate with them. Because they're like, we got to get her so we can mate with her. And then she comes out, she starts doing work right away.
Right.
Right.
They got to dig the tunnel.
She's digging those tunnels, getting those burrows, and then she starts hunting. So you're going to look for those burrows where it's sunny, well-drained soil, and it's usually on like the south or west side of the house where there's no tree cover, so it's full sun. So a lot of times people will, you know, do some landscaping and change things the following year. So if you get cicada killers where you didn't the year before, it's because you've done something to make that habitat like more, I guess, suitable for them in their nest. But they do like the same place every year.
Mm. Can I talk about one of my favorite?
Yes, please do. One?
I really like a group called the Scaliid wasps or Scaliidae. And this is a group that I like because they attack white grubs, which are some of my big enemies in the field that I study. And so they're going after Japanese beetle grubs and all kinds of other kinds of white grubs in the soil.
They smell the poop.
And they do smell the poop. It's kind of an impressive feat that they can pull off. There's one called Scolia dubia. It's kind of a big blue and orange wasp with, I think it's got yellow headlights on its butt that you can see. And they, if I'm remembering correctly, they go after green June beetle grubs, some of the bigger grubs down in the soil. Yeah, the ones that crawl on their back. And so they are able to smell them out and lay their eggs on them. And I think it's just cool to watch those ones work because you're talking about hidden organisms. These are grubs that are below the soil. You can't see them. Yet they're able to smell them out. And then they just dive down into the soil and they find them and sting them and lay their eggs on them. And those eggs hatch out and just the larva slowly suck the life out of these grubs that they find down in the ground.
White grubs are so juicy too.
They are so juicy.
That seems like a really good kind of meal for them.
Yeah,
can we use more? How do we utilize that for biological control though?
Well, it's hard to release them necessarily for use as biocontrol agents. So augmentation maybe is difficult, but conservation biological control, keeping the ones around that you do see, that's important. So using more biorational pesticides when we're applying those kinds of insecticides into areas, or planting those pollinator gardens that are all the rage right now, those floral resources also help to attract some of these parasitoid wasps. And then they're around to help protect your turf grass.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one called Typhia vernalis that specializes on Japanese beetle grubs in particular, and they can kill one out of every other grub. So like 50% control automatically with just having this wasp around. That's why we like that.
I think we should tell everyone in the metro that, because Japanese beetles are like their enemy.
Well, they're a little slow catching up with the grub population. Mm. So they'll be here soon if they're not already kind of buzzing around, but it'll be really cool to be able to tell people about that over the next couple of years.
So all our parasitoids that we've just talked about are wasps. And wasps, as immature larvae, feed on meat. But we have to say that as adult wasps, they're nectar feeders.
Yeah, they're gargling that down.
Right. So just have to say that. Do you know of any non-wasp parasitoids?
Tachinid flies, that's a good group of parasitoids out there.
And how do you identify those?
Well, I typically call them the hairy butt flies. I know all flies have hairy butts for the most part. But these ones, they have some extraordinarily stout bristles on their rear end.
And sometimes they're shiny.
Kind of shiny. Yeah, yeah.
Hairy butts.
Yeah, yeah. And Tachinidae, they focus on lots of different kinds of organisms, famous sort of for earthworms in some instances, and a few other groups of animals. Caterpillars, they'll lay their eggs on. A few others. What about you? Any other parasitoids?
There is the sarcophagae.
Yeah,
how about
flies?
You say that, remember?
Sarcophagin flies, I think. This is when we need the systematist on the show.
Yes, because I told you, I'm not doing family names today because I can't pronounce anything today. Right.
What do they lay their eggs on?
So the sarcophagid fly is also a parasitoid of the cicada. And that was an interesting...
More cicadas.
It was interesting when we found that out because I had collected a cicada and a cicada killer wasp for you to take on Backyard Farmer that night. And I had pinned them and put them in a box. And they were sitting on my kitchen table. And I went and looked in the box. And there were these four maggots in there. And I was like, whoa, where did that come from? And after some investigation, I found that those maggots had exited from the cicada's butt. And so...
Anus,
the posterior of the abdomen. And so this poor cicada was parasitized by a fly and then stung by a cicada killer wasp and then dragged back to the burrow. So
can't catch a break.
That poor cicada.
It's actually cool that we're talking about all these cicada ones because there's a beetle that gets them as well that's a parasitoid, the Rippaceridae. They lay their eggs on cicadas as well. So, I don't know what it is about cicadas, that they're just like helpless little...
They're so loud.
They are loud. Maybe that's it. The bugs are aggravated.
It's like, I'm hungry. Well, that seems like an easy target.
Let's get rid of this noisy thing. So, there's lots of different parasitoids out in the world. They do help us out quite a bit. They don't pose any hazard to us necessarily. And we can use them in places like greenhouses, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can release them in those situations or in agricultural settings and do augmentation biocontrol. Maybe we'll do a whole biocontrol episode sometime this winter.
Yeah,
talk about the different strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also conserve these organisms so that they're still around and can help us out in the field.
Either way, they're pretty fun to watch. And it's good to know when you see these aphid mummies or the caterpillars with all the little puffy white things, that's nature happening. And it, you know, there's this predator prey parasitoid thing going on, and now you should know more about it.
Yeah, it is a little horrifying, but it's not happening to you, it's not gonna happen to you, so don't worry about it, and just be thankful that there's something out there watching your back helping to take care of some of these pests. With that, we thank you for listening to today's episode. I think we've had a lot of fun recording it. As usual, Jody and I goof around and get a little weird. But if you wanted to find the blog on the web, you can look us up at arthro-pod.blogspot.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at @JLarson_UNL.
And I am at @JodyBugsMeUNL.
And if you wanted to send us some comments, some love, we would appreciate that, or ideas for future episodes. We've got some people who have emailed us recently offering up their services as guests, and we're going to be getting back to them really soon and letting them know that that's awesome, and we look forward to having them on the show. But if you have those kinds of ideas, we'd love to hear them as well. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time here on Arthropod.